Welcome to a Friday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, we'll be joined by Michael Pina of Vice Sports to talk about his recent feature on Roddy Magruder and Magruder's future with the Heat.
Then we'll take a look at next week's schedule and guess the Heat's record. Thank you so much for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast breaking down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here, as always, with David Ramil. It's a Friday show, so we are playing Guess the Record for next week, which has not been that... It hasn't been as fun as an exercise as we thought it would be this season, David, because we end up just predicting a bunch of losses, and then we end up losing even more games than we thought. But hopefully things will turn around. And then later on, we'll, of course, be joined by Michael Pina of Vice Sports, who wrote this awesome feature on Roddy Magruder. So we have him on for a few minutes to talk about that, and then about Rodney's future in the league and where we think he'll be next. But let's look back on how we've done so far, David, with Guess the Record. This last week, the Heat only played two games this week. They played against Atlanta, and they lost that game. I predicted that they'd win. You predicted that they would lose. They indeed lost. And then the last game of the week is tonight. We're recording this Friday afternoon. They play tonight against the Pelicans. We both predicted losses for that game. So either way, you're going to win this week. So congratulations.
Thank you so much. It's a huge honor.
But and then for the season that puts us at, I've won 3 weeks. You've won 2 weeks. We've tied 1 week. So let's look at it now to this next coming week. A few more games. Sunday at home versus the Utah Jazz. Tuesday at home against the Orlando Magic, and then on Friday they hit the road to go to Phoenix and play Devin Booker and his super team Suns. So let's look at Sunday against Utah. How do you think this plays out?
I actually like this matchup for Miami, so strangely enough. It's at home, and I think Utah is going to be traveling before they get to Miami. I think they have a good chance of pulling off an upset there, even though I think Donovan Mitchell is kind of rounding back into form, had a big game previously. I just feel like both these teams have they play at a similarly slow pace, and that kind of, I think, tilts more towards Miami's favor. I think they can, score enough even against a good defensive team like Utah, although they've struggled somewhat defensively this year. So for me, I like the Utah matchup in favor of Miami. How about you?
Utah's been bad this year, but I still expect them to turn it around, right? They're not going to be this bad all season. Rudy Gobert has struggled a little bit defensively in a weird way. I don't know if he's 100% healthy. Donovan Mitchell, he's just coming back from his injury. But they are adding Kyle Korver. I'm not sure if he'll be with the team for that game yet. We don't know. But I don't know. This Heat season kind of feels like one of those years where other teams sort of turn their seasons around against Miami. Yeah. And so I'm going to go with a loss here. I just think that Donovan Mitchell has too much firepower offensively, and I don't know who on Miami is going to stop him, especially if Josh Richardson is going to continue to be asked to be like the only guy who scores on offense. So,
well, that would be, ironically enough, Roddy Magruder, I think, would be tasked with limiting Donovan. So I think that's a good matchup.
That's actually not a bad – yeah, it's not a bad matchup for Miami, but I do think that Rudy Gobert is just going to have his way with Hassan Whiteside. And that's going to get ugly. And I'm not sure that Bam Adebayo, as good as he's been, is ready to take on basically the best defensive center in the league. So we'll see. So I've got that as a loss, and you've got that as a win. So Tuesday versus Orlando, what do we think about this one?
I think they're Aaron Gordon is going to be out. I think that might lean towards Miami as far as giving them an advantage. Look, Miami has struggled against the Magic. They lost in the home opener, obviously the season opener. I kind of think that they'll be able to pull out a victory here. I think this is a good opportunity for Miami to kind of establish themselves. Maybe if they win against Utah, kind of continue to build here. Look, time's running out. I still don't think that this is the situation is as dire as it appears right now, and I'm still optimistic that they'll find a way to turn things around. And if it starts here, that's as good a place as any. If not, then obviously this is a team that's geared up for a long tanking season. But for now, I still think that they're not leaning towards the tank. I think they're trying to find ways to win. And if they can pull one against Utah, then they'll find a way to beat Orlando as well.
That was like the coldest hot take ever. You just basically said if they lose Tuesday versus Orlando, then the tank is on. That's basically what you just said.
Yeah, I think so. Because if they lose against Utah and Orlando, then they're done. Like at that point, then they realize.
Because that's the four-game homestand, and they've gone 0-4.
Yeah.
That's why I think they end up winning this game, too, is just because I still think at the end of the day that the Magic aren't that good, as fun as they've been to watch, David. They're not that good yet. They've been more impressive than we thought, but I'm a little bit worried about the Nikola Vucevic thing. Mm-hmm. Now that he's like the best player in the league, that's going to be pretty difficult to stop. But I just think that after going 0-3, which is what we're predicting here, on this, or no, you're predicting a win versus Utah, but I'm predicting a 0-3 on this four-game homestand going into that Orlando game. I think this team has too much pride and will end up getting the win versus Orlando, especially after losing, like you said, in the season opener. Friday at Phoenix. Phoenix is the only not good team in the West. I've got this as a win.
Yeah, so do I. I look, a lot of teams have turned around their seasons. The Los Angeles Lakers, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Why not Miami? Their first three-game win streak of the season starts, I think, in Phoenix.
So you've got them going 3-0. David, ever the optimist. I've got them going 2-1. Not bad. So we think that this turns around a little bit this week. Maybe not ready to, you know, make the playoff run here, but I do think that this is going to be a better week than what we've been seeing.
Can't get any worse.
We've been proven wrong before, too, so we'll see. All right, that does it for Guess the Record. We'll talk with Michael Pina about Roddy Magruder's path to the league after this break. And we're joined now by Michael Pina of Vice Sports, who wrote a great piece called The NBA Player Who Went From Anonymous to Irreplaceable. He was writing about the Miami Heat's Roddy Magruder. Michael, thanks for jumping on the show with us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Wanted to ask you a little bit because you obviously you were in that locker room. You talked to some of the players, coaches, and things like that. And, you know, you've been in these locker rooms and we kind of know how it is where you talk to these players about, you know, their teammates and you can kind of you get a sense when things are really authentic, when they're really, you know, they're not just sort of heaping praise, but there's a real admiration for that player. Am I right in reading your story that it did feel like the Heat coaches, the Heat players, they have a real respect for what Rodney's been able to do?
Oh, 100%. You know, you ask anyone in the organization from Eric Spoelstra to Kelly Olynyk to, you know, they actually, I could tell that the Heat were kind of excited that I wanted to write this story because they actually allowed me to speak to, you know, someone on Spoelstra's staff. Usually, the Heat are, you know, one voice, one organization. And they, you know, when I interviewed Rodney, I sat down at their team hotel for about an hour with him. And, you know, he kept bringing up Coach Glass and the work that they, you know, all the film that they watched last year when Rodney was out with his injury. So I requested to speak with Coach Glass and they granted it, which is kind of unusual and just kind of speaks to how serious they were about the story, how happy they were and, you know, how important they view Rodney as a part of their organization. He's very kind of emblematic of the Heat culture, which I touched on briefly in the story. You know, hard work, selflessness, versatility, doing whatever is asked of you without complaining. You know, someone who can learn on the fly and is willing to and is extremely coachable. Those are all things that Rodney Magruder kind of exemplifies. And so everyone I spoke to could not have spoken more highly. Everyone's eyes kind of lit up when I approached them to talk. And the excitement was very genuine.
Well, I mean, you're talking to these guys, you're writing this story, you've got, I'm sure, a word limit to some point. Did something not make it into the story that you just kind of wanted to? I know, any untold anecdotes, quotes, anything like that?
Well, first of all, I do not have a word limit, so...
Oh, good for you.
My editor wants to murder me every single time I file a story. I basically got, you know, a majority of it in there. There was a lot of stuff that Kelly Olynyk he and I talked about, you know, Rodney was with the Celtics briefly during the preseason when I think Olynyk was in his second year, I want to say. So they shared a preseason there and a training camp. And so he spoke to me a little bit about, you know, Rodney there. And then Rodney was kind of, he was cut from them and went to play for the Maine Red Claws for a little bit. So Kelly was familiar with him for a while going back then. You know, just speaking with Rodney himself, I tried not to, I could have quoted him, you know, ad nauseum in the story, and I chose not to because, you know, I just kind of wanted to let others speak about him. But he's just such a humble, genuine person, a real pleasure to speak to meet, to interview. I would say that also one of my favorite people to talk to for the story was Udonis Haslam.
Oh, yeah.
And I basically put just about everything I think meaningful that Udonis told me. But, you know, those guys have known each other for a while. They share, you know, Magruder went to Kansas State where Frank Martin was his coach and was a huge influence on his growth as a person and as a player. And Frank Martin was Haslam's high school coach. So they share that connection and take that very seriously. And, you know, Udonis said that, you know, Rodney reminded him of a smaller version of himself, which is pretty high praise for anyone who knows Udonis Haslam and what he's meant to the Heat organization over the years. So yeah, I mean, there was a lot of reporting. I only had, you know, I think the Heat were in town for, you know, 3 days, I think, in New York, 2-3 days. So didn't have a ton of time to report it. I basically caught Rodney at the team hotel just, I mean, as the bus pulled up, I was sitting in the lobby. So it was basically from, you know, when the team landed in New York to I was at Rodney's locker after the game against the Brooklyn Nets that they won, just kind of chatting, shooting the shit with him. And so, yeah, a lot of stuff got in the story that I picked up along the way.
That's awesome. Yeah, I imagine it's, you know, with this season struggling the way they have, one of those victories is hard to come by. And so I'm sure he was a little bit more open to talking after a victory. But anyway, you know, part of, you know, Rodney's journey, obviously, I think is the thing that kind of Heat fans have gravitated to the most. You know, obviously, they take such great pride in being able to develop their guys. And you go into such great details about how he was developed. But even before that, you did a really good job of painting that picture about how hard his journey was just to even get those first looks. And, you know, you talk about his time in Hungary. What was it about his experience in Hungary that kind of rekindled his love for the game? Did he get into that kind of detail with you?
A little bit. I mean, Hungary kind of came up when we were discussing, you know, I pointedly asked him about it because I thought it was very interesting. You know, why did you go to Hungary? Usually right. Players who, you know, he was a talented player in college and an accomplished one. So for him to, you know, not go to, I don't know, Spain or France or, you know, any other, you know, place where, you know, any other EuroLeague team that's more, you know, reputable, I guess, right. or a
sure,
league.
Sure.
So that was very interesting to me. So I asked him about it and he told me the story about how his agent presented him with two options, Australia and Hungary. And he chose Hungary when he, you know, looking back, he probably, he laughs about it because he just wanted to be different and unique. And you know, when he was there, he was lonely for the first 2 months before his girlfriend joined him. And you know, there was a lot of, he's a very religious person. So there was a lot of, you know, sitting alone in his room when he wasn't at practice, which they practice twice a day for 2 hours, which is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
You know, it was a lot of Bible study. It was a lot of just kind of coming to terms with where he is, how unhappy he was over there, how lonely he was, kind of a search for, or I should say a discovery of what he actually wants out of his basketball career, which was, you know, he tasted the NBA, he tasted sure. preseason and, you know, the travel and kind of how luxurious that is. And he wanted that more than anything after experiencing Hungary. So I think that kind of, you know, lit a spark a little bit under him that might not have otherwise been there.
Did he give any indication as to why he didn't make it out of Kansas State, like why he didn't get an immediate call up? Obviously, he's a little undersized, and we see that even today, as much as he's improved, there are still questions about his size and ability to guard bigger wings. But was there anything specific that he might have hinted as to a reason why he didn't get the opportunities?
No, I mean, he thought that he was going to get drafted on draft night by the Orlando Magic with the 51st pick, I believe it was. I think that's what his agent told him. But, you know, it's funny, like the NBA, when you, it's funny to think about the NBA even, I guess that was 5-6 years ago, I guess. So funny how different the league is, was then than it is now. And, you know, being 6'4 and not particularly thick and built, he probably couldn't have been a 3-and-D player, a successful one back then. You know, there were only so many positions he could defend.
Right.
And, you know, not being able to, you know, he wasn't a knockdown 3-point shooter, and he still is a little bit streaky today. But just like the growth that he's made over the past few years in that area of his game, as well as, you know, what I talked about in the piece and what kind of drew me to him in the first place was just how advanced he's become as a playmaker. And that's why he started every single game for the Heat this season, I think.
Yeah.
But he didn't have that in his game really much going back that far when he was coming out of the draft. So I think that probably knocked down his stock a little bit.
Sure.
Can I just go back to something you said, Mike, where he was lonely and hungry for a little while until his girlfriend came out to join him? The real hero of this story, look, I mean, Ronnie has done a great job. Assistant coaches really taking him under their wing. The girlfriend just be like, you know what? You're lonely. I feel bad for you. You know, FaceTime's not invented yet or whatever. So I'm going to fly out to Hungary and live with you. Like, she's the real hero of the story here.
No, 100%. Shout out to her. That's serious dedication.
Well, I'm glad you kind of brought up that development to kind of, you know, circumvent the whole girlfriend experience there. But, you know, he's obviously grown so much, and you're right on the money when you talk about what he was like in his first year with Miami. He was a nice spark plug, kind of great defensively, you know, in certain spots, but offensively, he was mostly a catch and shoot type player. And he's kind of obviously shown incredible growth this year, particularly in pick and roll sets, and he has incorporated a nice floater into his game, things that he didn't have in his first couple of seasons with Miami. And then in your quote from Kelly Olynyk, one of the things that Kelly talks about is that there's room for growth from Rodney. And I imagine in talking to his coaches and Rodney himself, did he kind of hint at what he thinks is the next level of development for him?
I think further advancing his ball handling is a big deal. You know, it's pretty impressive right now from where it was, but that type of thing can always get better. And something that I look at in the NBA is I think that skill is a little bit undervalued. You know, as we look at teams switching more and more versatility being on the court, if you can shoot threes, that's wonderful. But if you can't do anything once that three is taken away and a defender runs you off the 3-point line, you're kind of useless. And, you know, what Rodney has been able to do is, you know, not only run off the 3-point line and attack with the floater, as you mentioned, but, you know, they'll start him in the corners. They'll run him off DHOs, and he knows what to do with the ball. He's exceptional throwing lobs to Whiteside, which has been really nice to see. And just generally making plays off high pick and roll and side pick and roll, which has been, I think, really shocking to the Heat coaching staff, even though, you know, they see his work ethic and his and, you know, what he's gone through up close. I think film study has really helped him as well. You know, last year when he was out, he would just sit in the back because he had a boot on his leg, and, you know, the Heat didn't want him on the bench in case some serious emergency were to happen at the arena. He wouldn't be able to get out in time. That's kind of why he was sitting in the back in the first place, as opposed to on the sideline. And he would watch, you know, Eric Glass code the game live. And I think that experience, as Coach Glass talked about, you know, kind of helps slow the game down for him mentally. And you really see that on the floor now, the way he kind of can get defenders on his hip. You know, he can move defenders with his eyes. He knows where players are going to be or should be, spacing correctly. And he's really taken advantage, and it's kind of remarkable to see. And you know, the numbers over the past, I guess since I jinxed him by writing the article, the numbers over the past week or so, or week and a half, have dipped a little bit. But you know, fundamentally, his skill set has expanded to the point where, you know, I still think that he should be in the most improved player conversation.
That was, I think, my favorite detail, by the way, in your story, other than the heroic girlfriend, was the fact that he spent time not on the bench, like, instead of, because his leg was wrapped up, he couldn't sit on the bench, so he just sat in the back with the film crew and basically just watched film and just went over film and just saw the game from a new perspective. And then, you know, we've been trying to figure out on the podcast, like, how did he take this sort of leap? And that really was a really interesting detail as to how he just improved his basketball IQ and passing ability and everything like that. So,
yeah, we've theorized that, you know, obviously the numbers looked a little, you know, they look a little gaudy when he first started the season, and they've kind of tailored off a little bit. And our assumption is that he's probably appearing on scouting reports now for the first time, because I don't think a lot of teams took him seriously. But I mean, we'll see how he kind of continues to progress over the course of the season. But, you know, you talk about his work with Eric Glass, and obviously, you know, he played for Steve Kerr briefly in summer league. He played for Brad Stevens in camp with Boston. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, he's played with Eric Spoelstra. He's had, you know, in his short NBA experience, he's had experience already with three of the best coaches in the league. You talked about his coachability. How much does he work with these coaches to kind of help his game and help grow? And how much do you think that plays into what will be the next phase of his NBA career?
No, actually, you know, you talking about Steve Kerr, that was actually when I was transcribing the interview, that was the number one thing. I was kicking myself that I didn't kind of double back and get to ask him more about, because, you know, he hinted that, you know, the experience with Kerr was eye-opening. The experience with Stevens was eye-opening.
Right.
But just, you know, his dedication to every day in the off season, being after he would, you know, work to become arguably the best conditioned player in basketball, which really can't be overstated. You know, he would meet Glass at the arena and they would just go over all these different aspects of his game, tirelessly every single day. The floater, you know, the numbers on that in terms of accuracy have been, you know, up and down, I would say, throughout the season, but it's still such an important shot to have in your bag as a player who, you know, can't necessarily get to the rim at will. But to answer your question, I mean, working with coaches and, you know, really absorbing like a sponge everything that they have to say, and not arguing, but instead asking questions. And when they tell you something that you're doing incorrectly, figuring out how to do it, how to correct it. And then, you know, the next time you're on the floor, the coaches are seeing that you've taken what they've told you and molded it into your game immediately. And that impresses them, and it encourages them to, you know, put in more work to make you better, because they know that you're listening to what they have to say. So from that perspective, he's just been just a wonder to be around for Glass and for Spoelstra and for everybody else on the staff.
Yeah.
Obviously, he was coming off that injury from last year, and that provided a sort of motivation that he talked a little bit about in the story. Did you get a sense, obviously it's a contract year for him, that he's even a little bit more motivated because of that, or is even thinking about this upcoming summer where he's going to get paid and he's going to have a choice of teams to choose from?
Yeah, I mean, he I don't know if he thinks about it, to be honest. He backed away from my constant prodding about free agency like a true professional. But sometimes, you know, I usually don't believe any players when they tell me that, because if I was a player and, you know, I'm making, I don't know, $1.5 million or whatever, and I can suddenly be making 30 or whatever he'd be eligible for, that would be on my mind literally every moment of every day.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily believe players when they say that they don't think about it. But with him, you know, he got into the, you know, the Heat and their, how they want players to meditate and kind of this app that they, that they gave, that they supply their players. And, you know, he speaks very eloquently about how that has kind of helped his mindset on a day-to-day basis, and how none of it matters if you do not take care of what's in front of you when you wake up every day. So, you know, to put one foot in front of the other as steadily as he does, I kind of believe him when he says all that. But he definitely is going to, you would think, once this slump that he's currently on kind of tapers off and he gets back to where he was, or closer to where he was at the start of the season, you know, he's definitely going to get paid. I don't think that there's any question about it. There's just, he's such a useful cog. I mean, just about any team in the league could use his skill set, just in terms of, you know, on both ends defensively, the fact that he literally never gets tired, so smart on that end, can guard multiple positions, can't be left alone as a spot up shooter, but is also learning how to shoot off the dribble and create for others. I mean, he's obviously not an all-star or anything like that, but in terms of, you know, what you want out of a wing role player in today's league, he's quintessential.
Well, let's talk about that really quick. What do you see, a team that you think could really use him, and maybe even whether it be at the trade deadline? And I thought that Miami might try to trade him, but after reading your story, it just feels like they have this tendency to fall in love with guys. They probably won't. I think they're actually going to try to find a way to fit him in next summer. But if it doesn't work out, in Miami, they just don't have the money to pay him. Where do you think he would be a really good fit?
That is a terrific question. I mean,
thank you.
Looking at Miami's cap sheet, it's going to be, I would imagine, a little difficult for Miami to bring him back if he continues.
They're going to have to trade guys to bring him back.
Right. And at the number that I think he'd command, you know, I'm looking around right now at just various teams around the, I mean, honestly, like, if Philadelphia were to strike out in terms of, you know, their want to add, you know, a bigger profile name, I think Rodney Magruder would just fit in perfectly there with exactly what they need. I think he'd be terrific on in a situation like that where there isn't too much pressure on him to do what he can't, but, you know, because that's a fear that happens a lot when players kind of have leap years. Their leap year kind of coincides with their contract year, and then they land in a new situation, and that team is expecting them to continue to ascend in a different environment, and it usually doesn't work out that way. So I think in Philly, if he were to just fit in, you know, spotting up I think his looks would be a lot cleaner playing beside potentially Simmons, Butler, and Embiid. And that would be a really great complementary role for him. Off the top of my head, that's a solid spot. I don't know if they would have interest. It's really difficult to kind of peg what Philadelphia wants these days. But
maybe even with Golden State, a reunion with Steve Kerr, they can use their DeMarcus Cousins exception next year on maybe Rodney Magruder or something like that. It could work out. All right. His name is Michael Pina. You can read him over on Vice Sports. The piece is called "The NBA Player Who Went From Anonymous to Irreplaceable." Again, really great work on that, Michael, and we appreciate you jumping on the show with us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Anytime.